The three by the Givonim, it says. The Givonim demand the justice. Rome is the Israel Hamel. Because the Givonim were very cruel. They wanted the justice. They wanted the revenge. And they could not be appeased. Because of the sin that Shaul had hurt them indirectly when he wiped that Kohanim. You have to read the story. I'm not going into that now. But nevertheless, they demanded very strict justice, and David tried to reason with them, and they wouldn't yield. They were lacking in rachmanis and compassion, and by shanim, modesty. V'gom lechasadim, and they performed chesed. You see, so the Moabim would not. The Jews were going through a very difficult time in the wilderness, and they wouldn't come out and give them bread and water. So they were lacking in chesed. Person doesn't have these characteristics, I'm always suspicious. You see, person, they're lacking compassion, cruelty, or they cannot do chesed when there's a need for chesed. I wonder if they're Jewish. I always suspect. I've seen cases like that where a person may have a Jewish identity, whatever, and they don't have these characteristics, and then you find that they're not Jewish. Maybe they were adopted, maybe this, and that. It's an interesting thing. You should always, what's that? But the halacha is that's only the Moavi, the men, because they had the responsibility. The failure to do so showed a achzarius, cruelty. Let them suffer, let them starve. But not the women, because it's not the derech of the women to go out into the wilderness and they don't travel and so on and so forth. So that defect doesn't apply to them. Now, okay. Let's see if we can understand what's the concept. What was the idea over here? We have a few questions over here. Of course, the main question that we try to deal with is the question about the stratagem that you used in order to arrange the marriage with Boaz. That's one question. And if Naomi wanted to be the shot, she wanted to make the shidduch, so she should have gone straight to Boaz. What was the necessity of all this? All right. Before we get to that, let's take up the main question. What was the idea? It seems to be patterned. It seems to be patterned after the idea of Yibum. Okay? Right? But Yibum has no applicability over here. Because for halachic reasons, there was no such thing. As we said, if we accept the idea that she hadn't converted, then they were never married. And even if they were married, the obligation would fall upon the brother. And there is no brother at this point because he died too, Kilyon. So the obligation does not fall upon Boaz in any sense. Alright? And yet, nevertheless, we see that it's a very big thing over here. We're talking about a very big inyan. Boaz took it very seriously, and Boaz really wanted it. We see a man who really wanted to do this, but held himself back until he cleared the path. He wouldn't break down the system. There's a certain system. I want you to know that Ploni Almoni didn't want to do it. Ploni Almoni didn't want to do it. There's a big thing over here. Big chesed in the making. What's the concept over here? What's the concept of geula? That's what I would like to explain. The concept of geula. Yeah. That's also troubling. Because how does he refer to Ruth as Eshes Machlon? When in point of fact they really weren't married, if she was not the Jewish, there was no marriage. Okay. You see the concept of the responsibility to be a goel for your close relative in a number of places. You see it, as I mentioned, in the Stei Achuza, if he's lost his field, you have to redeem him. You see it in the concept of Yibum, although it's not referred to with the terminology of Geula, but it's, as I said, this marriage is based upon two foundations, the field and the idea of Yibum. But as Lori mentioned, I was thinking about this yesterday, there's the concept of the Goel Adam. That is to say that the close relative, if somebody's been killed, let's take the classical case of Beshogeg. Okay, in the case of Shogeg, if somebody was killed, Beshogeg, so you have a halachic personality called the redeemer of the blood. And he has the right, to execute the person, the murderer, if he leaves the Eir Mikvah. That's an interesting thing. Now, what's the idea of the Goel Adam? If the individual has been sentenced to Golos, he's been sentenced to exile, so he goes, he has to go to the Eir Mikvah. Now, as long as he's in the Eir Mikvah, he has a right to exist. That's the idea. In other words, he's guilty for murder over here, but it's not intentional. It's not totally accidental either, because if it was totally accidental, he'd be putter. But it means that there's sufficient serious negligence over here, which indicates a psychological disregard for somebody else's life, but not to the level where it's intentional, because then you'd be liable to the death penalty if there were witnesses, and that's wrong. So it's interesting, if there is no Goel Adam in the family, there's no Goel Adam, the Bezdin appoints a Goel Adam. Everybody always thinks of the Goel Adam, yeah, everyone always thinks of the Goel Adam being the relative, and it's a it's a natural emotional thing to take revenge, right? And so therefore it doesn't make sense, because why would the Torah allow the person? The Torah doesn't set up institutions because you have emotions, they're just the opposite, you're not supposed to take revenge. And certainly because a close relative is not going to feel happy until the killer is disposed of. The Torah is not going to permit that. But here you see that there's a concept behind it. There's a concept behind it, because if there is no Goel Adam, so then Bezdin appoints one. There has to be a Goel Adam. And he takes up the role. It's an objective type of a Goel Adam. What's the idea? Why is that execution considered to be a Geula? Yes? Well, that was it's a similar idea. In other words, you have a responsibility to this individual who is close to you. If a person is killed, if a Jew is killed, right, and nobody cares about it, so you're basically saying that his life had no purpose. That's a bizei hames. Just as we've established that there's a chiyuv of kavod hames, right? The whole idea behind kavod hames is it's a chiyuv of chesed. It's the true chesed, and it's based upon the fact, the recognition that this person lived his life and he lived a significant existence. And if you fail, in other words, he was killed, and then you just go on with life as usual. What are you saying? You're saying that his life had no meaning. His life had no purpose. That's the idea of the geula. By geula, you're saying his life did have a purpose, and we can't go on. We can't go on until justice is done. All right. So in the case where he killed intentionally, so justice demands that he has to be executed. In the case where he killed accidentally, so then the person who did it has to go to the shogeg. He has to go to Aaron Mikluk. But if he's flaunting that, if that person is flaunting it, he wants to, he was responsible for somebody else's death, and he just goes about, he leaves Aaron Mikluk. He wants to go about his life as though nothing had happened. Then you have a chiyuv to actually kill him. He's chayav nisa in that situation, and by doing so, you're redeeming the blood, because that's the chesed that you have towards the person who's fallen. If not, you're saying his life has no value whatsoever. Now, where do you see another expression of that idea? Where a person has been killed, it's a very serious thing. That's the case if they find a dead body between two Egla Rufa. That's at the end of Parsha Shoftim. Yes, the person was found between two cities. We don't know who killed them. The case is we don't know who killed them. It's a very fascinating halacha. So there's a whole procedure. They have to chop off the head of a calf. Egla Rufa. And then they have to make up the elders, it says, the Talmidei Chacham, the Dayanim, have to make a proclamation, a confession. And they say, Yadenu lo shapchu et adam hazeh. Our hands have not spilled his blood. V'einenu lo ro, and our eyes have not seen. So Chazal asked the question, who suspects them of being the killers? You're talking about the biggest people in the society. What are they confessing? So it means to say, yeah, that they bear responsibility too. That it's true. The primary responsibility is on the hands of the killer. Yeah, but there's got to be something wrong with a society in which something can happen. This is, if the society recognized the seriousness of this type of thing, they'd have set up safeguards and procedures and so forth that it would, It can't be. You can't just walk away from it. You didn't do it. Now, the question I had asked once, years ago, if that's the case, if every time a murder takes place, it's not just an indictment of the murderer, but it's an indictment of the entire society, and the elders have to come out and they have to investigate and they have to take responsibility and say, our hands didn't shed this blood, we looked into the situation. So why not, why is it only if the murderer is unknown? Why is it only, it should be every case, even if the murderer is known. And even if he's executed, the Bezdin should always have to come out every time there's a killing and say, our hands have not spilled this blood. Why is it only in this particular case? In other words, like this. See, in this, the danger over here is when a murder takes place and justice is not done, it's basically a negation of the whole value of the person. He's just saying nothing happened. His life had no purpose anyway. It's insignificant, and therefore nothing is done about it. That is the danger. That's a form of Yimocha Shemo, you're wiping out his name. So what does it mean his name is wiped out? It means to say that as far as we're concerned, his existence has no value, has no purpose. There's no chesed, there's no recognition that this person was part of the situation, he contributed, he lived a life, and insofar as we're human beings, we can't function unless we're together in a society. So there's a chiyuv towards every individual. You see? So in the situation where the murderer is known, so Bezdin fulfills its responsibility by seeking out justice, by being involved in justice. Being involved in justice, that shows that they're not negating the value of the person. And once they're involved in that process, of course they have to look at all the factors. Essentially they have to deal with the murderer, but in doing so, they're proclaiming the fact that we can't tolerate this thing. We won't just act as if nothing happened, and then they put the focus on themselves as well. But where there is no murderer, so Bezdin doesn't do anything. So then there's the danger that a person lived a life, he was part of the society, then somebody just destroyed him, and we're saying, nothing happened, we don't care. That can't be. See, that's the ultimate form of negating the value of it. That's why there's a concept of Goel Hadam, that there's a special responsibility upon those. You see, everybody in society could be the Goel Hadam, but the Torah operates in setting up the halachic institution on the basis of how, as I said, you're naturally going to be much closer emotionally, you're much closer to this person if it's part of your family. So the primary responsibility should be on those who are closest to him. You saw the person, you knew him, you dealt with him, you recognized what his qualities were. So the primary chiyuv falls upon you. But the idea of a Goel Hadam, that somebody has to stand up, somebody has to speak for this person and say that this person's life has significance, you can't just negate him. That could be, if there is no Goel Hadam in terms of the family situation, then Bezdin appoints you, you become one by designated Goel Hadam, because the concept is the same thing. Even though you don't have that family tie, but what's the difference? Everyone has the same clear, but again, you see, like in tzedakah too, the primary obligation always is in line with human emotions. The aniyei yercha goes first. You have to give the poor of your own city, because that's, you have to have a structure, and you have to have family. That's the whole thing. You have to have family, so you have to take care of your family first. You can't start off and say, leave your family, I'm going to do chesed, go off into into Africa and cure people over their disease. You got to take care of the way it works. You see, and that would be destructive. That's a crazy thing. It's Torah's chesed. The chesed of the Torah is Torah's chesed. It's a different kind of chesed. It's not an emotional thing. That's real chesed when you raise a family and you train them properly and they get a good education and they have skills. And of course, you're limiting yourself just to your family. That's a selfish thing. Then there's your community. You have to build a community. And then there's always a hierarchy of obligations. It's very important for a person to realize that. And a lot of times the person, he thinks he's at a high level. He doesn't look at it that way. It's not the case. That's umubsarcha altasalan. You have to realize that the whole world couldn't exist unless we had this framework. Okay, that's the idea. That is the idea, I believe, of the Goel Hadam. And it expresses the idea that we have to function in terms of another individual even after he's dead. Even if he's died, it's not going to help him any. But it's our karzato. You see, it's our recognition that we can't negate. You can destroy a person in two ways. You can kill him, but then after he's dead, you just simply ignore the fact. It's like he has life had no purpose. That's it. That's yimach hashemo. It's like he didn't leave anything after him. He made no impression upon us. Yes. People are attracted to that idea. The people are attracted to the idea. And I think it could come from this desire for immortality in a physical kind of a sense. You see, because people don't like, you got to be very, very careful. It's a very delicate type of an idea. Nobody likes the idea of death, physical death. Although, as I've explained, there isn't, if a person lives properly, man is designed in such a way that he naturally will live eternally. He will not have death. Physical death is not the death. But that's not psychologically what most people are concerned about, is the loss of physical. They can only relate to a physical existence, and whatever the case may be, in a certain type of a way, they want to be part of the world. That somehow they're not really dead, and therefore I think that's the cause that people are that aren't that religious are very concerned about giving the name to someone, you know, and saying Kaddish and lighting Kaddish. Somehow or other, if we remember them, they're still around. It can appeal to that emotion. But that's not the case over here. That's not what the idea is. The obligations that we have towards the dead, first of all, the chesed in burying them properly. It's not like if they're not buried properly, so something's going to happen to their soul. It doesn't make any sense, because the body is gone now, and if the person that's tzaddik, his soul is separated, departed, so to speak, and he'll get his just reward. You know, the fact that if we don't give him a proper burial, why would that have any effect on him whatsoever? It's for us, though. We need, since we operate with these categories, and since we do relate even to a dead person as, in a certain sense, as to another person, it would be a lack of chesed on our part. That would be a cruelty. We don't identify with the situation. You see, we're negating that person. It would be a negation. That's loeg l'rosh. That's the concept of loeg l'rosh, which is, it means you're laughing. You're not allowed to eat and drink in front of a corpse. It's called loeg l'rosh. You're like laughing at the person. You don't identify with this person anymore. You see, it's a negation of what this person was, and it's essential for our perfection. That's the approach that I'm taking over here. It's essential for our perfection. You're not really doing anything for the person. That's how I want to approach the next step, would be yibum. Lloyd made a very good point that Boaz is like a designated miyabim. You know what I mean? Yibum. Yeah, because he halachically wasn't.
No, but he did it all with the family in mind, so that's why he asked the question.
Ki yeshu achim yachdav, when brothers dwell together. That's interesting. Why the pasuk even mentions that? Because the law of Eden doesn't have to do with how the brothers are dwelling or not dwelling. Yeah. But there's a concept there. Brothers dwell together. It's an important idea. Umeis achad mehem. One of them dies, Uvein ain't low, and he doesn't have a child. Losia Aishas Anes Achusa Lirzar, the wife of the deceased should not be for a stranger. Yavama Yavo Aleha, her Miyabim, her Yavama brother in law, should take her, should Ulakakal Alisha Vyivma, shall take her for a wife. V'hoya habchor asher teled yokam al shem achiv hanes v'lo yimochesh mo miYisrael. Now this pasuk can be translated in two ways. Rashi says the b'chor over here is a reference to the older brother, that the older brother, the b'chor, should be the one to do this. Although if he doesn't do it, then the next in line would do it. So he takes it like this. V'haya b'chor, and it'll be the b'chor, that's the eldest brother, not the child that's born. You can read it two ways. You can read the b'chor meaning the child that's born as a result of this marriage, or you can take the b'chor to be the eldest brother, who is the miyabim. If she asher teled, when she gives birth, when she has a child, yokum, he takes the place, he stands in the place of his brother. He inherits the property of the brother, and he perpetuates. He perpetuates the name, and the brother's name is not wiped out. So what is the idea over here? What's the reason for this? And by the way, I'm not going through the entire parasha now, but it's very interesting. This is an extremely important concept according to the Torah. Why do you see it's very important? Because if he fails to do so, there's many reasons why we don't do it anymore, Yibum. The Torah also prescribes a way of getting out of the Yibum. That's Chalitza. Now the ceremony of Chalitza really entails degradation of the brother. That's an interesting idea. The brother who refuses, because if the brother refuses, he has the right to refuse. And then she can't marry somebody else until Chalitza is performed. But the whole Chalitza, the essence of the Chalitza is really degradation. It's really to the grave. It's public degradation, which the Torah generally prohibits. Any kind of public degradation. It's the removal of the shoe, and she spits on the ground, and she says, "Thus shall be done to the man who will not build the house of his brother." He won't build the house of his brother. And his name shall be called in Israel, Beischad, the house of the removed shoe. It's like a degradation. Bear in mind that this is done even in the case where the person, because sometimes there's a case where Bezdin will instruct them not to. Before they go through this, as I said, we don't practice this anymore. Okay? So today, if the situation arises, and if the man wants to be Miyab, then we don't do it anymore. We don't allow it. I'll explain. It's a good question. So in that situation, where the guy cannot do it because he's prohibited from doing it, they have to go to Chalitza, and he has to suffer the same humiliation. Thus shall be done to the man who refuses. But he's not refusing. He wants to, but he's prevented from doing so. It's an interesting idea. But you don't even need that. The halacha is, even in the time when there was evil, that, you could foresee very, very unusual situations. Because we're talking here about a marriage. Now, in a marriage, you can't just decide a marriage on the basis of these abstract criteria. The Torah is not negating all of the normal factors to make for the Torah is not saying that two people can get together for the sake of even and have a great marriage. I mean, that's not reality. Reality is we can be dealing with people that just aren't suited for each other. Let it take the case of Boaz and Ruth. You can have a situation where the brother is very old, the Bechor. The older, he could be 85, and she can be 22. I mean, so what are you going to do, have a marriage? So therefore the halacha is, that's why Beis Din is involved in this thing. The Gemara brings down that before you go ahead with Yibum, Beis Din has to give them Eitzah HaHogenes Lem, a good Eitzah. Beis Din looks at the situation, a little bit of pre-marital counsel. Which is not a bad idea, in general, especially if it's Manazah, but pre-marital counsel, let's sit down. Let's think this over. Objective opinion. Are you two suited for each other? And then they say, if he's very old, they give you stick with your own kind. Or he's very young. You're a young guy, stick with the young girls. And they discourage it. They don't do it. And you still have to go through the Chalitza. So it's a very interesting idea. In other words, I think it all is interrelated, roughly speaking. You're not negating his existence. Because here's a man who established a household. You see? It's a chesed to the mace. He's established a household, but it wasn't fulfilled. I mean, the whole purpose, the entire world was created. The Gemara says that in the case, have you ever the case of a chatzi Yev and chatzi Ben Chorin? If a person... You have to understand halacha. If a person is an Eved, we have Eved Kanani. Okay, we have the institution. Eved Kanani is sort of he accepts the mitzvot and he has Mila. He has Mila and Tfila. It's a sort of a transitional conversion. He's a Gentile and he's a slave. A Jew owns him as a slave. But he has him undergo Mila and Tfila, and he's chayiv in mitzvot, by the way. He is chayiv in mitzvot. The same status that mitzvah, he's chayim, except for mitzvah, I say, he says, mangrama, just like a woman's status, because it's time, he's not in control of his time. So, when he's freed by the master, so then he's automatically Jewish. He doesn't need conversion. The only thing which is preventing him from being a complete Jew is the fact that he's an Eved. You can't have a chalos, you can't be an Eved and be a Jew at the same time. But the institution is really to elevate the individual. Now, you can have a case of a chatzi Eved and chatzi ben Chorin. He's half Eved, half free. And it's a very fascinating issue in halacha. Because the part of him that's free is chayav mitzvos. And the part of him that's an Eved is pata from mitzvos. It's sort of like, well, not pata from mitzvos, but the case, for example, would be where he had two owners. There was a shutfus. Since it's constructed along the lines of ownership and property, you could have a partnership. Now, one of them freed the Eved. So that gives him, so he's partially free. It means, I mean, it's, you don't envision like a half the person chopping down the middle, half of him is an Eved, which half is an Eved, you know. It means that he has two statuses. It's an incomplete status of being a Jew, and an incomplete status of being an Eved. So the Gemara says, oh, it's a machlokas now. It's a machlokas, I think Beis Shammai Basil, I think Beis Shammai says, I'm not sure who, I'm just, you know, quoting from memory here, that what does he do now? One day he works for his master and one day he's free. That's how he's got it constructed. Okay? You have to work one day and you're free the next day. Split up that. I think it's Beis Hillel who says that the other Mamiyama says no. You got to free him. We coerce the one who's still maintaining him to free him. Why? Because it says he's in a dilemma. Dilemma, what's the basic dilemma that this person faces? He can't be Mekayim mitzvah. He cannot be Mekayim. No, mitzvahs he could do. Because as I said, he's only part of... Mitzvahs is not a problem. Because most mitzvahs he could do. But first of all, he's chayav all the mitzvahs except for the Nevan Grom. So you'll say that the part of him, which is the Ben Chorin, right? He has partially Jewish, is chayav. He's chayav to blow Shavah. So blow Shavah. That's not such a terrible thing. That's not the problem. There's one mitzvah that he can't do. What's that mitzvah? Puravot. You cannot do Puravot. Why? Because Lisa Shifcha, he can't marry a Shifcha now. Because the part of a Jew. He's not allowed to marry a Shifcha. A Jew can't marry a Shifcha. Right? Evidently was the only case we learned. Right? That's an exception. Okay? Can't marry a Bas Chorin. Can't marry a regular Jew because the that's part of him is... She can't marry him because part of him is a... she'd be guilty of marrying an Evidently, even though he's a Chassi Evidently. So the Gemara says, we bought them. So let him be free. So all right, can't do it. Normally we say...
Why don't you marry another woman like that? Like a Bamzer. You just find somebody else.
The Gemara says, what is solely bottle? So normally what do we say in a case like this? The person, the honest Rechman of Patria, we normally say, you can't. So what's so terrible? See, well, says, but v'halo, lo nivru ha'olam, but the whole world was created, yale v'shpil piri v'rivya. That's the whole purpose of the creation. Because it says, Lo tohu bara, God did not create the world to be tohu, to be barren, was shevas yitzara. So apparently this mitzvah is different than any other mitzvah. Normally in the course of mitzvahs, you say, if you can't do it, you're free. But here where the mitzvah is central to a person's perfection, that is to say, to partake, the whole perfection is to identify with the will of God and to participate in the whole purpose of what the world was created for. To be part of that chain of puri varivya, for that we force the other... We force him to free him, and now he becomes completely Jewish, and now he can marry a Jewish girl. Why? Well, because the entire world was created for his Irving. So it's as though his libatel, his existence would have no purpose. It's lacking an essential component. So here's a brother who was in the process of fulfilling his purpose in life. His purpose in life, of course, involves learning and study and so on and so forth, but all for the sake of being part of the system that God has created. And he took a wife, but he wasn't able to fulfill it, because then he died. So then this wife that he took, this bias that he established, shouldn't go to somebody else. It should be completed. It should be perpetuated. Otherwise his bias, you see, he's perpetuated, his purpose is fulfilled through that bias. Now there are two ways. It could be through him directly, and the interesting explanation that it will be his in a sense, because Rabbi Chaik mentioned this idea years ago. Then I saw it was brought down by one of the Mefarshim. That he is, his existence is perpetuated because it is his child, in a sense. And that is because Chazal say that it's like, what do they say? V'hoyel abasar echad. That the relationship between man and wife, it's like they're one unit. So she, the wife, is really a part of the husband. And she's having a child, so that's, in a sense, since she's a part of him, she's connected to him, that child relates back to him. So that's the idea, that he was involved in fulfilling this mitzvah. So you can't negate that. By negating that bias that he created, you're not negating his entire existence. So, therefore, we're showing our chesed to this individual, we're going to perpetuate, going to continue the bias, even though it's not directly him physically. That's why it's kieshu achen yachta, brothers are living together. Because in the normal course of events, brothers will be together, they'll help each other out. So therefore, you can't just negate your brother's existence. Like it has no value, it has no meaning. And he has a wife. He didn't get a wife, there's nothing you can do. But he's in that transitional stage. He had a wife, and the purpose, of course, it's not just, we're talking here about the ultimate purpose. We're not saying that's the only purpose of a wife. No, a person operates on two levels. Of course he's satisfying his personal desires, but the philosophical purpose of marriage is Balolo, that the world was created for period of Rivia. That's real. He wants to partake. He wants to participate in that. And the idea of not is a terrible tragedy for a person. So you don't allow that tragedy to take place for your brother. And you perpetuate his existence. It's interesting, I was thinking of a parallel. I think, and the parashiyos are pretty much related to each other. This parsha, sorry, it's in Shevtim, in the parsha of the Muhammad, you know, when the Jews went out to do battle, so before they actually went out to fight, there was a whole ceremony in which they would read off the exemptions. There were certain people who were militarily exempt. Okay? Now, one of the categories is someone who was Kiddushin, right? He married Velo Lekacha. He didn't, in other words, there's a gap between the Kiddushin is the first part of the process. We do it all together now, but the Kiddushin is the first part, and the second part is the Nisuin. So if a person had been Ma'aris, he had done Kiddushin, but he hadn't consummated the marriage yet, then he was let free. Pen Yamas Ba Mochama, lest he die in war, V'ish Achar Yikachena, and somebody else. And Raj, that's a matter of Agmas Nefesh. You see, that he was in the process of taking a wife, and it wasn't fulfilled, and somebody else will have her. Okay? That answers Nomi's question. That the mitzvah of Yivam presupposes that a person is on the highest level of perfection. Because he's entering into a marriage, not because of the normal motivating factors. Because of your own interests, you know, compatibilities and romance and so on and so forth. But for you, your priorities are such that purely for the sake of chesed. Of course, Beis Din will indicate that there may be some cases where it's just an impossibility because of the gap. But basically, the entire purpose is for this chesed, to illustrate chesed. So if a person should not enter into this marriage for any other purpose except for chesed, for the sake of money that she might have, or for sexual lust. So therefore, when Chazal saw that they were not on a high enough level, and there was a danger, that would distort the whole concept. If it's done for the wrong purpose, then it destroys the whole concept. You see? And the Torah wanted to, that's why you have the whole thing of Chalitza. It doesn't mean this particular person. You see? It's not embarrassing for this particular person. It means to say that in the ideal situation, somebody that would not build up his brother's house, that would be a very low level. Very low level. That's not the ideal. Selfishness, you see? A lack of chesed. You get it? And some remaining issues that we want to resolve. We wanted to understand the nature, the character of the marriage that was arranged. Originally, the idea was that of Naomi. It was a very strange kind of a marriage, and it's referred to as a geula, a redemption. A lot of things about it still remain strange. First of all, we said the entire
plan, the strategy that was employed, it strikes us as being extremely difficult and not even in line with tzniyus, as we said, modesty. Because the it was arranged for her to sneak in surreptitiously and dressed up in her finest and wearing her finest perfume and to actually lie down in the middle of the night next to Boaz and scare him out of his wits, right? He was shocked to find her there. And it's that I think, of all things, that just seems completely a million miles removed from everything we're accustomed to. We don't expect this type of behavior. Because, as I said, you can't study the Torah with preconceived notions. You got to come to learn. And if we didn't understand it, so we say we don't understand it. It's Torah. But we'll try and make some sense out of it. Because on the surface, doesn't make any sense. It seems to be dangerous, very dangerous. Because you see, Chazal said that Boaz prayed. He had to arrange that she should leave her after he heard what it was about, and he agreed to marry her, but he doesn't give her an argument or anything like that. You know, I'd imagine the first thing he would say is, what are you doing here? Whatever possessed you? Huh? Yeah. No, he finds out who she is, but what kind of a way is this to arrange a marriage? Anyways, he does tell her to get up early and to sneak out of there. There is a danger of being seen. So you see there, I think the Chazal said he was misfollowed, that nobody should see, that no Chilul Hashem should come about. Very important point. No Chilul Hashem. Of course, this only strengthens the question. So why did it have to be done in such a strange way? Naomi could have arranged the Shidduch directly. Okay. But also we want to understand what was the nature of this, the purpose of the marriage altogether. It was a Yibum kind of a thing. And we said a kind of a thing because it's not a true Yibum. We discussed the concept a bit last week, but we have to tie it in. That it would mean to redeem the field. The Steachuza, we said. That it's we discussed last week the concept of Geula, of redeeming. Redeeming someone from, you know, from some type of a distress that he's fallen into. For example, when a close family member loses his field, steachuza, his inheritance field, and then it's a mitzvah to redeem the field, and you could, after 2 years, you could purchase it, redeem it. In other words, even if the owner does not have a right of refusal, he gets paid, and the field reverts back to your brother. We discussed all the different forms in which this takes place. Now, let's see if we can apply it to the situation over here, and what the summary of the general theme of the Book of Ruth. Okay? I think there's a number of themes. What would you say is the main theme, like in a word, if you put into a word, what is the book talking about? After all is said and done, Chesed seems to be, it's not the only idea, but Chesed seems to be a major theme over here. But a different kind of a Chesed. Yeah, Chesed Shalemus. A different kind of a Chesed. Now last week I want to expand on that a little bit. The Torah in Vayikra, in that section where it talks about the redeeming the field that your brother has lost, it's very interesting. We did this last week, I'm just going to refer to it again. It says, if your brother becomes poor, and it's an in-between state, umata yado, he's sort of weakening. He hasn't lost everything yet, remember? So we said you're supposed to rush in and strengthen him. And Rashi gives the illustration that it means to say that he's begun to fall. His situation, he's fallen on hard times, but he's still keeping things together. But you know, everybody knows about situations where people are experiencing rough times, and they haven't fallen yet. They haven't become impoverished yet. They haven't had to sell, you know, all the furniture yet. Then it says, "V'hachazakta bo," you should strengthen him. "Al tanicheu sheyerei v'yipol." Don't let him fall down. And then it says, "It'll be very difficult to put him back up again." And he gives the example, "Elachaskeu mishas mutas ayad."
strengthened from the time that he starts to weaken. What is it like? It's like if there's a load on a donkey. A load on a donkey is starting to fall. You know, I think we've all had that. We've loaded up the car, you know, put things on top on the rack, you know, and starting, then you're driving and everybody's pointing, you know, and it's starting to shake. Right? And while it's still up there, Rashi says, even one person can rearrange it and can fasten it. But once it's fallen to the ground, then even five people can't put it back up again. It's a very interesting idea. Now, it seems to me that this is a categorical thing. This is a different type of a chesed over here. It's not just a description, a little advice, but this is a qualitatively different kind of chesed, as I was pointing out. And I was thinking of the category. I was thinking to coin a name for it. There's two kinds of chesed. There's reactive chesed, and then there's preemptive chesed. Those are the categories that I formulated. What exactly? This is preemptive chesed. This is a different kind of chesed. What's so special about this? After all, the lesson that Rashi is telling us, once you hear it, doesn't strike you as being such a revolutionary idea, right? You pretty much, you know that yourself. Don't we all know that it's easier to straighten it out before it falls? And after it falls, so what's Rashi? I mean, Rashi doesn't come to, but there's a very big point over here, yes? You're saying it's true. It puts things in a new light. Like the Rambam lists different levels of tzedakah. And the highest level of tzedakah is to get a person a job, a parnasa. Which means to do something so the person doesn't even need stuff. That's not just quantitatively different than when a guy comes to you for help and you give him something. That's qualitatively different. Yes? Qualitatively. Point. I agree 100% that it's clearly superior, because a person, because we, even if you help the person out, but you have to realize that even if a person receives tzedakah, but he's still not happy, because the very fact that he's dependent on others is not a pleasant thing. So there's the, you know, there's the issue of preserving human dignity. So to bring about a situation where a person has what he needs and doesn't have to become dependent, where he's self-sustaining, that's the highest level of chesed. Yeah, but why is it that most people don't practice that type of chesed? And what makes that into a qualitatively different chesed? I just want to point that, see, the Torah had to tell you this. To point that, the chimata, when your brother is weakening. Because most people aren't going to step in, get it? A higher level of chesed. It's very, because for all the reasons that you've mentioned, anticipatory. I even use the term preemptive, you could use anticipatory. Most people don't function on that level. But I maintain that's the really chesed shalemus, and that's the chesed of yadis. Marlene, you had asked me at the very beginning why we're referring to converting, right? The fact that Ruth converted is like a chesed. I intend to explain that in this context. Yeah. That converting to yad, Ruth's conversion is referred to as a chesed, because he says to her that the chesed you're doing right now is greater than the chesed, the original chesed. Okay. But let me just summarize the points. There's a difference when a person has fallen and is in need. So that's reactive chesed, which is a high level, of course. I don't mean to that, but there, you see, it's made an impact upon you. You feel bad, right? You feel bad about the person's plight, but also you feel good because you're the helper. So there's two things. There's emotion involved, but I don't mean to belittle it, because it's still a high level. Because as Marion said, that man by nature is so wrapped up in the self, is so narcissistic, that it, you know, people don't even want to do chesed and help somebody else. There's also this is not everybody will agree with this, but I maintain, I've discussed this a number of times, that there's a certain enjoyment that people get out of seeing other people suffer. If a person is honest, I maintain that that's one of the biggest enjoyments. That's why the news, anytime there's a major calamity, that's the big. Why? Anytime you've been on in traffic jams, right? Traffic backed up, and then you finally get to the spot, and there's no accident. But there's an accident. It's called rubbernecking. You know, everybody's flying down to see. If there's a plane crash, it attracts. Now, everyone's going to deny, but there is a certain sadistic gratification, because we are aggressive. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging it. and to witness the misfortune of others. You may not feel it consciously, but on a certain unconscious level, this confirms each person wants, each person, conversely, by the way, to witness the fortune. You know, like I always say, people complain, you know, you're a fair weather friend, you're not with me in times of trouble. Just the opposite. A lot of times, people have a friend that are always there for the tzaras, and then when they have a simcha, they're not there anymore. And what happened? Why weren't? Because as long as you were suffering and they were the helper, you see, they enjoyed that role. But now, you don't need, you're not dependent anymore, you've become independent and you're rejoicing. That's not so easy. It's not so easy. That's why I say that the mitzvah, by the way, Mesameach Chasam HaKala, is considered to be one of the greatest mitzvahs. And you can see, because you're really, yeah, because somebody else is in the limelight, somebody else is, it's their night, and you're really subservient to them, you're just making them happy, you're rejoicing. To rejoice in somebody else's simcha is a very, very, very high level. True rejoicing, in my opinion. Because, basically, it is bothersome. You see, by the way, the more you think about it, a lot of people, you know, when people get appointed to a big post, Supreme Court justice, all then suddenly all these things come out. Oh, this guy smoked pot 20 years ago. Had you a friend, a so-called friend? When people get envy, exactly, it's a tremendous. Yeah, as long as no one mentioned it before, because as long as he was on the same level as you, but nobody likes to see somebody else suddenly be catapulted into greatness. Okay. Now let me just continue along this line. Okay. That's why it's very easy when the guy is falling. He's falling, so nobody wants him, nobody notices. He's of no interest. Nobody notices. It's easy to ignore. But you can't ignore when a person is in poverty and the kids are starving, you can't ignore it. But when a person is, you can ignore it. He's still okay. What do I have to give money for? You see? And also, I think it caters to the aggressive, and it's not so bad. Who cares? You see? Because that means even he doesn't necessarily recognize. But that's the highest level of chesed. You see the guy smaller than his net, you look into the situation, maybe he's got a problem at the job, the boy, whatever it is, you make certain arrangements, and now everything is fine. He doesn't even thank you. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even know. It's anonymous. He doesn't even know that you helped him. So where's the payback? You're not the hero. He never fell down. He never came to you for help. You see? That is the chimah. That's the highest level. That's the preempt, that's what I want to call the anticipatory. And yeah.
I was just going to say, if we're doing it for, let's say, our own
child. Chesed, then, is the chesed, which is not after the fact, when a person is in trouble already, which is, as I said, it is chesed, but that which anticipates and prevents a person from coming into a situation where he's going to really have that trouble. Where do you see that? I believe, because the real chesed, what's the purpose of chesed? What's the goodness of chesed? What's the virtue? Because we're modeling ourselves, we're perfecting ourselves, we're modeling ourselves in line with the so-called midos of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Right? Now, when we praise God, what do we praise God? Of course, we praise God that God comes to us when we, in a time of need, in a time of danger. But the ultimate praise is what? What's Birkas HaMazon all about? Yeah, Birkas HaMazon. Birkas HaMazon does not talk about the fact that God, that we were hungry and God saw that we were hungry and He just came in there and gave you a meal. No! It's that God's perfection is such that God maintains a situation in which each being, who knows in lechem l'chol basa, He set up a situation. His providence is such that it expresses itself by setting up a situation in which each being has what it needs by the very nature of things. Ki li'olam chasto. Because his chesed is eternal. God's chesed is different. That's a totally different kind of a chesed. That's anticipating the needs of someone before the situation. That's the, by the way, of course, as you point out, that's the type of chesed that you show to your children, for example. You try, you don't, you know, you anticipate. You plan. You don't wait until they're desperate and then they're running to you for, and then you'll give them food. And it's ridiculous. They don't even notice. It's like your parents complaining. A kid is always, you know, like, you didn't even notice all the things I did for you. And children don't notice all the things, because on the other hand, they take it for... I'm going to talk about that issue as well. What I've done is,
It's related to what we're doing. I was discussing it last night with the Rivka, different character types that you find in the world. And let me just give that illustration now before I go on to... You have a question? That's the reason why we say the only chesed that is like that, you say, I maintain this type of chesed is like that, anticipatory, where the other person doesn't even know, where you set up situations, and that's the chesed of Avraham, as we'll see. And chesed, in terms of the burial of the mace, so that's it. Anything you hope to get from this person, he doesn't really thank you, he doesn't need you. There's no need in that sense, in the ordinary sense. So it's purely objective, and it's chesed to the bria, to the creation. That's why chesed to the mace, of course if it's done properly. Again, everybody has the capacity to take something and distort it. You know, if you're going, if it's basically a person who's going to the funeral because he wants the family to notice him and this and that, so then he's distorting it. It's no longer chesed shalom. But the chesed, that's why the ultimate, who mentioned this? That's why the, what's the ultimate chesed shalom? It's mace mitzvah. A kohen gadol, as you know, is not allowed to be metame, even to the close relatives. A regular kohen can be metame to the close relatives. But a kohen gadol can only be metame to one case. That's called a mace mitzvah. What's the mace mitzvah? He has no, right, he's in the woods, he encounters a mace, this mace has no family, no one to bury him, the kohen buried him. That's the ultimate chesed shalom, because there's no connection whatsoever.
Okay, so Boaz
says to... Good point, that at first, when Naomi tried to discourage Ruth at the beginning, she mentions that she thanks them for the chesed that you've done for the mason and to me, the living. Clearly, two different things. Because the chesed, to me, there's a certain fair amount of identification. You see? So, you took a liking to me, you feel bad for me, you're a good person. You're sensitive. But the mason is a totally different kind of thing. And you recognize that since that's a different level of chesed, your recognition of the fact that even when a person is dead, you still have a debt of chesed, because not to do chesed would be a negation. Would be saying that they didn't, that you didn't benefit from them. That's the whole idea of chesed to the mace, is a recognition of the fact that you would not be what you are without them. And for you to negate that would be a distortion of reality and catering to your own egotism. So we have an obligation to give chesed. They really don't need it. You know, what's it going to mean to, you know, from a practical standpoint, the mace doesn't need it anymore, but we have the chiyuv for our own perfection. You see? Since we do it in our framework. You see? Since we're not cold philosophers, right? And we do recognize this, we do associate this being, this corpse, whatever. We do associate him. We have a relationship to him as though he was that person. How we act towards that person, you'll say like this, like a person was extremely beneficial to you and helped you out tremendously in life. Now they're dead, there's hardly anybody to go to the funeral. So you'll stay home and say, look, the guy doesn't know that I'm there anyways. And you see, that's what you'll say. But you know very well that that's not the case. That you, in your own mind, you do make the association emotionally. You know that it's selfishness, and it's an attempt to deny. You want to break the whole association. You're just using that as a philosophical rationalization, you see? But since we are creatures of emotion, right, and we do take it as being an act of respect to this person. The funeral is an act of respect to this person and an acknowledgement of everything that he stood for. You see? So therefore we have enough to fail to give the proper respect would be a lacking of chesed. It would be a corruption of our own soul. That's the idea of the chesed to the mace. Bear in mind though that the concept of chesed to the mace, by the way, the whole essence of this marriage is chesed to the mace. Basically what it is. And the concept of chesed to the mace, Rus was exposed to this concept. The ground was paid for it by Naomi. Naomi teaches her about the idea, because when she thanks her, when she's about to part with her, she thanks her for the chesed which you did to the living, to me, and to the dead. She did tachrichim, and Chazal says she made tachrichim for the mace. That when her husband Machlon died, she was involved in kavod ha'mace. But more than that, I think the fact that she clung to Naomi was not just because of Naomi, but that was also chesed to the maid. You see, that's a form of chesed to the maid. That is to say, that if you benefited from someone, if someone was kind to you, did something beneficial to you, so you have an obligation when if they should die, chesed to the maid. But chesed to the maid also expressed itself in paying special attention to those people who, you see, keeping up their concerns. That would be a chesed to the maid as well. For example, when the Rambam writes about who was the closest person to the Rambam, the most significant relationship that he had in his life. No. I mean, from an emotional standpoint, with his brother. He has a letter. The Rambam, in one of his letters, describes how devastated he was by the death of his brother. He had a very close relationship. He said that was the joy of his, the way he talks about it, it would seem that of all of these things in this world, the most significant emotional relationship was with his brother. His brother was a brilliant scholar, and also he was a businessman. And he supported him. He would go off, he would do the business for the family. And he said, but he was a brilliant scholar in his own right, and he has his own books, his notes. And then he died, you know, on a voyage. It was very treacherous in those days, on a business voyage. And the entire treasure, the family's wealth, went down with him. And he said that he was devastated. He said for an entire year he couldn't get out of bed. He says, now it's years later, he says, every time I come upon one of his notebooks and I see his writing, he breaks down. Now, the Rambam, that's when the Rambam became a doctor. Because up until that point, he was free to just learn the whole time. His brother was supporting him. Tremendous chesed. Because the brother recognized how important the Rambam's learning was for Kalal Yisrael. You know, then, and we know now, 1,000 years later. Then when he died, so the Rambam had to work for a living. That's when he became a physician. But he, of course, then he took upon himself the full responsibilities for his brother's widow and the children he raised them. That's chesed, you see? In other words, chesed is not just to see what the person is buried. But if somebody had done you a tremendous toe in your younger days, and then, you know, now the person has passed away, and you should discover the child. Let's say you're a teacher, and you have the child of that person is a student having problems. So would you say that your relationship to this person is the same? Well, you're a good teacher, you give a certain amount of your time, so you'll treat the student the same way as you treat any others. Or do you have a special obligation to this one more than the others because of the chesed? So I would say that's chesed to the maid, because you benefited. Your failure to do so, since we operate with these categories, doesn't mean that the person in and of themselves, this student, has no special claim on you. Right? Because you should treat all your students more or less the same. But the special claim is because of a chesed. You owe it. You owe it to this, because indirectly it's a form of chesed. To not take care, special care, would be to negate all the good. You see, you'd be a kafli tov, because that's the way we operate. You see? That's the way we are. We do recognize that this person is connected to that person, and I benefited tremendously from that person. So how can I now be indifferent to that person's needs? And that's one of that person's needs, the needs of the maid, to see that their child is cared for. You see, that's the idea of the chesed over here. Now, to take it all the way, this concept then, and by the way, this is not my own idea. Rabbi Chait enunciated this idea. But honest, I had worked at most of the problems. The problem about why the strategy that she used with Boaz. I was able to work it out, but I really, for the life of me, I was stuck on this. It's interesting why I was stuck on it. I could not see the concept behind this idea of retaining the name of Machlon. Because it seems, from all practical purposes, that the Machlon had committed an Avera. They had left here Elimelech and his two sons, Machlon killed, they'd left Eretz Israel. And then they had married, now the way we're learning, they had married shiksas, as we say. And that's a serious kind of an issue, serious chay. Right? So the whole idea that in the marriage it was to lahakim shem, to utilize the concept of yibum, right? Which makes sense in a normal context, because two brothers have a certain responsibility for each other. That's Yeshua Acham Yachdav. Brothers have a responsibility to each other, and it's a recognition of the fact that you couldn't, you know, you wouldn't have what you have were it not for the entire society. It's chesed to society is the main thing. Chesed to the family unit. That there's a whole structure that nobody, each person is narcissistic and egotistical, and he thinks that, you know, all the good that he has is because of his own innate greatness. That's false. Whatever we have is only because of a system. And the bulk of what we have is because of others. Family, society, community, society. That's why in tzedakah it always goes that way, the closest. The one that's closest to you comes first in the line of tzedakah, because that's the way society functions. That all makes sense to me, that you would not negate the existence of your brother, that if he built the bias and it just falls apart and you could continue it, so that would be a lack of hakar zatov, that would be a lack of chesed, of your obligation. But here, what was the connection? This is the answer that the Rabbi Chait gave, and he said that she was motivated by a desire to express her hakar zatov, her recognition of the good. But the recognition of the good, you see, that of course she had a love affair with Nami, but it wasn't a love affair with Nami per se, it was really a love affair with Yardas. She totally embraced, it was a complete embrace of Yardas. Wherever you go, I mean, I go, and then you see her subsequent behavior, her commitment to Tznius, her commitment to Halacha. I mean, she was a person who embraced it on the highest possible level. So she wanted to demonstrate, when it came time to getting married, she wanted to use the marriage to demonstrate her hakaras hatov to Yadav. How wonderful this whole thing is. That's really chesed, that's really hakaras hatov. How many people that she benefited, what's the real benefit? The real benefit was that she had the opportunity to save her life. Because without Yardas, we obviously, we take things for granted. But she, being an outsider, recognized, what's that? She wanted to express her hakaras hatov to Yardas. And that is to say, that if a person looks at it correctly, if they have a true appreciation of Yardas, then they'll realize what life was like before and what life is like if. Unfortunately, many Jews take it for granted. Okay? Because when you're born into something and you have it from youth, you fail to appreciate it properly. And she represents the real appreciation, because she knows what life would have been like without it. Now, what she wants to show, therefore, what was the who did she owe the debt to? She had a debt that had to be paid. Catalyst. Who did she owe? She had a debt.
Because she hadn't married him.
That's right. Exactly.
You know.
If you trace it back, if you look at it, you see, I was blinded from seeing this because I was too focused on the problem of intermarriage. So I wrote off Machlo completely. And there was no way I could get out of that. And that's why I was stuck. What's going on here? And I even had a tough time with Nami. You know, you separate when somebody, you try to discourage intermarriage, and you know, man. And then afterwards, you know, you disassociate, you say, well, you don't encourage it, you're hoping it'll... Then afterwards, she's very close, everything is very close and cozy. But what Rabbi Chait was saying was that she had a chi of hakaras hatov. So we're not looking into the fact, we don't know what all the factors were. And when the thing that bothers me, the danger is, I don't want to in any way belittle the evil of intermarriage, because I could see people distorting it. Well, it's not so terrible. Look, it turned out for the good. That's not the intention over here. It was wrong. But nevertheless, in her framework, obviously Machalon, whatever his problem was, we don't know. But he did retain a certain amount of perfection, of knowledge, of insight, that he was a catalyst. As a result of the personality and the teaching of Machlon, she was able to free herself from idolatry. That was the phenomenon. That marriage was what extricated her from that whole situation. So she had a chi of hakaras hatov, and she wanted to show hakaras hatov to mock alone and to demonstrate to people, because the people did not know. They could have cut him off. His name would have been cut off, because he left. He left the land at a time of need. He abandoned. And then he married someone that wasn't Jewish. She wants to show that even though he had gone away from the land, but when he went away, he did not become corrupt. Had he become corrupt, in terms of philosophy of Yadus, then it never would have produced a Rus. He was still worthy, in spite of everything, he was still worthy. His name shouldn't be cut off from the cloth. So that's what, and she had the chiyuv to do so. And that was the concept of the marriage. The marriage was basically to express our kavanah itself. It wasn't just to find a husband. You see? Okay, let me make clear. If Boaz simply married, if Boaz would simply have married Ruth, it wouldn't have any reflection back to Machlon. Not at all.
Right.
Okay, but
he couldn't be Goel until he married, because she had to unite
the inheritance. You see?
And that was her situation.
That's right. That's the point. That's why Plony Almoni was willing to take the field, but not to marry.
Ruth.
That's what it means. To perform this in according to the form of a Yibo marriage. That's the idea. If he would simply marry her, so then what's up to with Machlo?
It couldn't be Goel without marriage.
No,
right?
Could
not. That's my question.
Yeah, no, could
because
not.
There's no ownership without marriage.
That's too
right. She's not a kosher agent until she marries.
In other words, to lahakim shein. That's what Boaz told Ploni Almoni. That the purpose of this, on the day that you acquire this deal, it'll be in conjunction with what? The restoration of Machlo. You see, the restoration of Machlon by taking Ashes Machlon. He's referring now to Ruth as Ashes Machlon. They were never really married. Halakhically, it wasn't a good marriage. But we're talking in the philosophical framework. The relationship of marriage did exist between them. It was a marriage in that sense. And that's the point. Yes, the general concept of intermarriage, of course, is, like you say, it's the cling to Avodah Zarah. Alright? But we don't know. Obviously, we're speculating over here. I don't think that Machlon, even though the halacha gisser is the same, married Rus, who was a idol worshiper. Obviously, she was a high level individual, right? Who had freed herself. He would not have married an idol worshiper. That's the whole point that she's proclaiming. Don't think that he descended to the lowest depth. That's her chiyuv. Occurs itself. Don't write him off. Don't think he had descended to the lowest depth. Now I would say that
she's a reflection of what he is at the time he died.
Right. He did it. It was wrong halachically, but he didn't cling to. He didn't marry her to cling to idolatry. She wasn't idolatrous. She must have been a highly intelligent, philosophical individual, or someone like Yisra, I imagine, who was searching for the truth. And as a result of Machlon, she was enabled to come to the true system. You see? So she, now, anybody could have looked at what Machlon did and said, you know, terrible thing. And she wanted to redeem him. You see, to redeem him from that defamation. He should not be defamed. Because she had a chiyuv to do so. Because she had benefited from this person. And since she had benefited from this person, she had a chiyuv akartel. Even though that person had done an avera, that doesn't matter. That doesn't free you from your obligation. That's between him and God. You see, just because a person does an avera doesn't mean you write him off and you defame the person. That's the tzidkus. Most people think in categorical terms. Yeah, it's very nice. He went left there to Shrall, he married a shiksa. You know, just write the person off. People like to operate in categorical terms, but you know how to do so. It's true. Person didn't have it, but that doesn't mean there's no good, they didn't do a lot of good. And when people use that, they use it as an excuse so they should be putter, they shouldn't have to do a karakatel. You see? They shouldn't have to do a karakatel. It's not the case. It's not the case. You see? This is the marriage with the Geula, and the Geula was towards Machlon. And then he knew about this, Boaz.
That's what Boaz said. I mean, obviously, she didn't express, she just expressed them in a general way. And you'll spread your wings over me, which is marriage. Kigoyalata. So he knew what the concept was. The Megillah doesn't record every aspect of the conversation. But when Boaz said he'll take care of it, and he goes to the next day to gather all the people, and he mentions to them, he says there's another Goel. He wanted to do it. See, Boaz wanted to do it because Boaz was on the level of Chesed Shalemet. So he wanted to marry her, but he didn't want to take away the opportunity. Halachically speaking, he wanted to follow the line. There was a closer Goel. So he gave the guy, the brother, another, the uncle of Machlon, he gave him the opportunity. But that he was not on the level, for whatever it's not clear, he didn't want to, either because he was concerned with Zomishpacha, right? Or there's Chazal in the case because that halacha, she was a Moabite, and not everybody liked the idea, because it's halachically, it's only a Moabite was prohibited before, whatever the reason is.
But that would also fit into that.
To explain now is the strange plan, the manner in which this shidduch was made, sneaking into the field at night and all of that. Then we said that that's extremely, right? Problematical. In Pasuk Yud, when he finds out he's shocked, and what's going on, you know, who are you? And she says, I am your servant, Rus, and you shall spread your cloak on your servant, Kigoyalaka. Okay, that expresses her intention, right? And he says, blessed are you of God, my daughter. This latter chesed of yours is greater than the first, not to go after the young men, imdal, whether they be rich or poor. Now, why is this chesed greater than the first chesed? And the first chesed is alternatively explained as being the chesed that she showed to Naomi, right, back in Moab, that she stayed with her and was loyal to her. Well, some say it's the chesed of converting to Judaism. But whatever the case, let's say it's both. It's all one, because I think it's all one package. Why is this chesed greater? If she, obviously the original chesed was very great. Again, it was chesed shel emes. She didn't have to, she could have left Naomi after Machlon died. She could have left, gone back home, but she stayed with her, took care of her. This chesed is greater. What's so great about this chesed? Why is this chesed so great? She wants a husband. Now she's getting something in return. She's getting a husband. So what's he so excited about this chesed? Yes? Yeah. Even though Yibam is a very big mitzvah, as we said, right? But before a couple would actually, Bezdin would have to give their consent, give their advice. They give them an Eitzah, how Ganis lands. Because it's true, it's a big mitzvah. But the mitzvah entails having a marriage. And a marriage is something which is an institution, and it has to have a basis. You can't just marry for a mitzvah. I mean, you have to live with the other person. The human nature is involved. So therefore, let's, not every case where a brother would die, right? You know, the surviving wife may not be fit for the surviving brother. I mean, you could have situations where he's very old, she's very young, right? So they're just not made for each other. So what do you do? You get together and just produce a child. Just to do the abstract mitzvah, and what kind of life is that? They're going to wind up hating each other. The Torah didn't mean to abolish marriage; it's supposed to be enough. And what's going to come from such a child? So therefore, Bezdin has to evaluate and see whether they're for each other or not. If they're for each other, then it's a mitzvah. Now, that's what he was. You see, his reaction was the chesed you're doing now is greater. Why is it greater? This is the ultimate expression of chesed shalemus, because it's one thing. It's one thing to your young girl back home to give up your time, spend some time with the old mother-in-law, with the nummy, whatever the case may be, and all that. That's fine. You see? Yeah, but you got your whole life. You're not giving up. But to give up that which is, from an emotional standpoint, the most important thing to a woman, your whole romantic life. That's what he says, that not to go. You've decided not to go after the young men. Whether they be wealthy or whether they be poor. Chazal say that a woman basically would prefer a young guy, even if he's poor, to an old man if he's wealthy. I mean, because what good is the wealth? It means to say like this, that
he had to be the task over here. See, why did Nami come up with this plan? Nami is the one who devised the plan. The plan, Boaz, if the plan would have been broached to Boaz, who was 80 years old, and Ruth was 40 years old, and, you know, young and beautiful, he would have rejected it. It's crazy, it's not right. You're not gonna, you can't impose a marriage on someone. It's gotta be something which comes from the heart, where they really want to do it. Otherwise, it's gonna fail. See? That was the challenge. So therefore, that's why she's supposed to get dressed up in your finest. And to put on the perfume. And to come in the middle of the night and lie next to him. Then he'll be, if you do all these things, then he'll be convinced that this is what you really want, emotionally. That your emotions are in line with this kind of a thing. Otherwise, he's not going to be convinced. And he won't do it. That's why he's, and you see from his reaction, you see, that this is the ultimate chesed. Because in the previous case, it was a great chesed. Yeah, but here, that which is most precious to you from the emotional standpoint, and you're using that for the sake of performing a mitzvah of Akaras, that means that all, that's the highest level of Avos Hashem. That's the highest level of Avos Hashem. That means that every area of your life is motivated by your desire to be in line with the will of God, even when it comes to marrying. And in marrying, this is the determining factor. He never would have accepted that idea unless he saw for himself. That was the only way. He saw for himself that she was willing to do so. You see? And to, you see, that his main concern, because Boaz was on the level of the highest level of chesed. That's why he was concerned. We'll get to this point in a second. Let me go from here. Let me go from here to the next point. Marlene had asked, you remember? I think you asked on the way out to the first thing. The chesed, the indicator implies that the chesed in becoming Jewish, right? Our conversion is referred to as a chesed. Is everybody right? Because it says this chesed is greater than your first chesed. And Chazal give two explanations. The one being the chesed of taking care of Nami, and the other is saying the chesed of becoming Jewish. Now, why would becoming Jewish be? No one would think of that as a chesed. A person becomes Jewish because that's what they believe in, right? They believe in the true ideas. Okay, what is the point here? What is the whole essence of being a Jew? What's the whole essence of Yardas? It's chesed. The whole essence, Yardas is founded by who? Abraham. Right? Why? Abraham discovered the true way of life. Right? So what? That doesn't make him, why did he, what was the whole idea of the people? Of the Jewish people? It means that Abraham lived his life purely on the basis of the ultimate chesed, which was to establish, to set up a system and perpetuate a people so that all of mankind should have the opportunity for all future generations to come to the true ideas. That was the whole idea. That's chesed. If it wasn't for the concept of chesed, Avraham Avinu could have had everything. He had discovered he could have had a perfect life in terms of himself. He discovered the true ideas. Right? He extricated himself from idolatry. He had the truth. And he could have lived out his life. And that's the end of that story. We would never know about him. There would never be a Torah. Why does he have to bother? Why must he travel and set up situations and practice hospitality and have these gatherings? What's the point of it? It's a big tircha. To go traveling around and winning people over and setting up, you know, the whole thing, praying to God. He doesn't have a child. What's the whole idea that he needs a child so much? And Yitzchak was all because of Titan Emes Yaakov, Chesed Li Avraham. The entire Torah is Chesed. That's the whole idea of the Jewish people. That the Jewish people exists a separate nation from all other nations, and in spite of the fact that we have to suffer persecution and hardship and anti-Semitism, but the whole purpose, the whole key of the Jewish people is so that we can maintain. That's why, as I said, a person's basic obligation, the Rambam says, if a person, he lists the categories of people that don't have a share in the world to come. Okay? Different averos, this, that. Then he says, if a person does not do any averos, the person keeps the Torah, but he separates himself from the Jewish people. does not join in with their celebrations or with their times of mourning, sorrows, and he goes off. He lives like just any other, like he's a Frenchman. He has no identity, but he keeps the Torah. This person does not have a share in the world to come. He's not in line because he's not in line with the essential perfection. He's just living for himself. He's using the Torah purely for his own selfish ends. So I would say, the fact that she abandoned, the fact that she could have, she had the true ideas, she had the knowledge. If she was only concerned about herself, she didn't have to come all the way. But no, it means that she embraced the entire system and the Jewish people. And to give up all the, that's what he said to her when he saw her in the field, that you've come loxos, you've given up all the securities in life, all the benefits, all the protections of home, of community, of country, and you've attached yourself to this people to share their faith because you're prepared to do so, to seek the shelter under the wings of God. That's what he said to her. That's the highest level of chesed. That itself, the fact that you embrace Judaism and become a part of this people, and it's what? To perpetuate the idea. It's not a selfish thing. It's chesed for mankind. That's why the biggest mitzvah that a person can do is something which is a Kiddush Hashem. Kiddush Hashem is the biggest mitzvah, to do something which causes people to respect the Torah, to look up, wow, the Torah is a fantastic. And conversely, the worst thing that a person can do is a Chilul Hashem. That's the worst. And you see that Boaz, even at that night, when it wasn't even his fault, when she had come and she stayed there, he was concerned, he was bespalled that no Chilul Hashem should come about through what was taking place. Because everything was the purpose, the motivating factor that guided this was the desire to sanctify God's name, but to turn out a Chilul Hashem. And his only concern was it shouldn't be a Chilul Hashem. So that's that was the reason for the strategy, in my opinion. That was the reason for the strategy. That this expressed the chesed shelemes, to the highest possible degree. That is to say that she, a young woman, who could have married, you know, anyone that she wanted, pretty much. And this is something which everybody draws a line. This isn't, you know, we all draw a line and the chesed stops at a certain point, right? That's the way there's certain, obviously you can't do chesed in every arena, because your instinct, you have to gratify your instincts, your emotions, is that fine? But this, to give that up and to be willing to marry someone purely on the basis of this principle is the greatest level of chesed. But that's why she had to do this route. This idea, the story, to sum it up, the story of Rus is really the story about perfection, which is really the story about chesed. I mean, we see that really, this seems to be the core of human perfection, seems to be revolving around chesed. And that really expresses, of course you can't have true chesed without knowledge, obviously. But the purpose of knowledge is to bring one into the framework of a relationship with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? And that's why Avraham Avinu, he exemplifies the one who reaches the highest level in terms of love of God, Avat Hashem, which means that every activity in his life is an expression of his love of God, and the primary expression was the expression of Chesed. And as we said, it's a different kind of Chesed. It's a preemptive kind of Chesed. I just wanted to point out maybe some practical, you know, related ideas, that there's different ways you could do chesed. And sometimes people do chesed and the other person is not even aware of it. Because we only think of chesed in terms of the reactive, by and large. When someone calls you up and has a problem, so then you respond. Yeah, but you don't sit around thinking, you know, that, you know, so-and-so, I know their psyche, I know their needs. I know that if I just call them up and discuss an idea with them, let's say as a teacher, let's say I know students, this and that. If I just call them up and told them over an idea, because as I happen to be, I wanted to discuss it with someone, and that'll make them feel real good. And as a result of that, it'll
Now, that will not appear to them as a chesed. I'm only doing them a favor. The very fact that it seems to be spontaneous would give them a good feeling. So for a person to sit back and say, I know people that do this. I know people that do this. That do certain activities for other people. And it's, the other person has no idea why they're doing it. And it's making them feel good. You see? And the other person never would even look at it as a chesed, never even think they owe anything, because it appears to be quite natural. But the other person already knows their needs, know what they need, and anticipates the need, and thus it may come over, say hello, may visit this and that, all ostensibly, in a purely friendly way. But the reason why they did it was because they made a cheshbon that this would make the person feel good. See what I'm saying? That would be an expression of a preemptive kind of a chesed. The same could be applied in all areas of your life, if you think about it. The same could be applied. It could be applied now with friends. It could be applied with your husband or wife. It could be applied with children. It's a preemptive kind of a thing. We don't think along those lines. What I said before is very, very significant. We tend to wait. First, nobody asked me. Nobody needs me, you see? It could be in a shul, it could be in a community. We tend to wait. And if a problem, there's an appeal, and we respond, we think we're really good people, we responded. See? But to anticipate, and to do certain things, before they ever arise, and in a way, when you'll, because you did it, it'll never even be recognized as an act of chesed, that we don't think of. That can really, though, enhance a person's life, and as I said, in many areas of your life. Now, that's basically, I think, the one of the things. That's the whole idea of the chesed of Avraham. That is purely anticipatory, so that people shouldn't have to become idolaters and then be saved from idolatry, but to set up a system so that when people come into being, everything is set for them, all their needs are taken care of. There's a Jewish people and there's a system and so on and so forth. That's the chesed. And Avraham wouldn't be there. Nobody would say thank you to Avraham. You see? Because that chesed has nothing to do with getting something back from the person. It's purely an expression of his identification with the Ratzon Hashem. That's the highest possible level. And, you know, well, obviously we're not on that level, but we have to know that such a level exists, and we have to strive to whatever extent we can move closer to that level. Now I was just thinking that I was thinking of an analogy that there's different kinds of people in the world. And, I'm just going to say it over for whatever it's worth, okay? There is the giver, and because I was once, this idea came to me, I was once having a conversation with someone about doing something for the shul, and I don't know what it was. I was, how could I repay you, the debt, whatever. I don't know, like somehow I got to say to the point. I was explaining, well, you're not a taker, or you're not a user. I was making that distinction between a taker and a user. So he said, what are you talking about? So I worked out this concept, alright? That there's four, actually there's the giver, and among the giver there's two kinds of giver. As we'll soon see. Then there's the user, and then there's the taker. Okay? What's the difference between a user and a taker? So I thought of this mashal. Alright? You know, let's say, well now you go traveling, there's rest, I don't know why I thought of this, but I thought of it. There's, you know, as you're traveling, there's, thank God, there's rest stops along the way. Right? You're driving in a car, you're a few hundred miles, so you have a place you can rest, you have the facilities, you can get a drink, you can relax, have lunch, you know, so. Okay. There was a time when you didn't have rest stops, okay? Now let's say an individual had been traveling and there was no rest stop, right? And he had to pull off the road and this and that, and there was, you know, somebody invited him into his house, let him use the house, and he feels really good. Then he had the idea, you know, that he wants to build a, because this is a very frequently traveled place. And he knows what a, you know, for human dignity, that people don't have a place where they can rest and use the facilities. So he builds this beautiful rest house with bathrooms and picnic tables and a soda fountain, right?
And he leaves a note. This is open, you know, to everyone for free. You know, please rest, be reasonable. You know, just all I'm asking, you don't have to pay anything, it's all for free. All I'm asking is that you know, just leave it nicely and don't, you know, leave it the way you found it and don't leave a mess. And that's it. He's provided everything that you need. Okay? That's what kind of person is that? That's a giver. Okay, now another guy comes along, right, driving this and that with a carload of kids, whatever, comes into the place, right? Ah, fantastic, you know, there's a place to rest over here, and there's a place to eat, and there's the sodas. Yeah, takes cups, takes this, eats, right? And he sees the sign, but then it's they finish eating, all the, you know, the mess, the paper plates, the ketchup is all over the place, and that gets up, scoops up the kids, and leaves a mess behind. What's he? That's a user. Because he's thankful. He's thankful to God. Thank God there are jerks in this world that that have nothing to thank God that they have nothing to do and they create these things for me. So I should enjoy it. No one's around, obviously. If people were around, he might be embarrassed. But nobody's around. So why should he have to bother cleaning up? It's perfect. He got a perfect deal, you see? Now, that's the user. That person, the only value other people have for him is in what he could use. You see? Now, of course, as I said, if other people were around, he might not do it because then there's the embarrassment. So if nobody's around, he could care less. He just got an opportunity to get a free shot, and he's a user. The taker, in my opinion, would be, I'll tell you why I call this person, the person that comes, uses the place, cleans up everything, right, puts it back, and then leaves. That's a taker. Now there's another person. There's one other possibility. Give me the other possibility. Another person comes, uses the place, right, sees, reads the sign, and what does he do? Exactly.
What?
He leaves money. He leaves it in an envelope, and he says, this is a beautiful concept. It's a beautiful concept, and I want to be part of that concept. I benefited from this thing. There is a vision. There's an individual who had a vision who rose above petty selfishness, was able to see a larger framework, and wants to do a kindness for people. And I hadn't thought of that. And I benefited from that. So I don't want to just be a taker. See, the other person's a taker. He didn't violate. He didn't make a mess. You see, the user is a violator. He took a chesed, and that's how he repaid evil. He took a good and repaid with evil. That's a user. You see, he's just there to use. The taker took. Fine. But he didn't see he's a taker. You see? He didn't see, it didn't move him. He didn't learn from the other guy's example. And the other guy wasn't asking for anything. He just explained what the concept was. But the giver came along. The only thing I would say is that there's two kinds of giver. He's a reactive, responsive giver. The other one is a preemptive giver. You see? The other person looked at the situation, traveled around, and the idea to be a giver developed within himself, you see? The other person, he never would have come up with this idea. But having been exposed to the idea, he wants to become a giver as well, you see? And that's the idea of Rus. You see, having been exposed to the idea, having benefited from this, and recognizing that there could be nothing more important than this, she didn't just want to be a taker for herself. She could have been a taker, but she became a giver. And she joined in with the Jewish people. And that's the idea of the chesed, the gadol chesed. And then she went on to reach the highest level of chesed, as he says, when she was prepared to give up the most pressing emotional desire for the sake of demonstrating how great this system truly is. Because why else would a person marry?